The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already. It's Levan Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't know what it is that you do at 11 o'clock. Whatever it is that you do, though, I'm happy that you're doing that do with me. You heard the music. You know, whenever you hear the music, it means I'm talking about the service and sacrifice of country. Let me just, before I start this show, say, y'all seem to can't get nothing with these flags right. Right? When they should be up, y'all got them down. When they should be down, y'all have them up. I don't know how much more of a national contribution Mr. Hanna needed to make in order to have flags lowered in his honor. Think about this. We lower them for police constables. We would lower flags in honor, not the national ones, of course, the service flags, for Marine seamen. If what would be considered the runt of the pack has flags lowered in their honor, please explain to me, what is it going to take? Is it going to take cosmosis, maybe, for someone to, you know, we talk about putting him on the money, all right, which is an interesting situation, because I thought the reason we put Mr. Pinling on the dollar bill was because he was the man with the common touch, and we wanted the dollar to be able to touch as many common people as possible. Well, from all accounts I've heard, Eddie Hanna has been even greater a common man. I think we're going to have to figure that out, all right? Aside from that, Cabinet Office, because I hear y'all know I'm nothing to do down there these days. Please, send out a communication so that we can lower the flags in honor of Mr. Hanna, all right? But you've heard the music, which means I'm talking about nation, the national sacrifice, etc. And you know, it's August, so I'm doing the series every Wednesday in this month. I have with me this morning retired Force Chief Petty Officer Sean Rule, who, at the time, August 1994, 27 years ago, would have been an able seaman when they were abducted by the Honduran vessels during a poaching arrest in the Anguillas, the news reports. Mr. Rule accounts that it was around the Kisal area and that they were abducted for some 8 days or there's about. And he's here this morning to give an account of what exactly it is he remembers being the Honduran incident. Mr. Rule, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Miller. I'm okay. Thank you. And you?
So, 27 years ago, mm-hmm. You're a young Marine, 7 years, I think, at the time enlisted.
Yes.
Have already gone through your first promotional exercise, so you're not the most junior man on the boat. The decision is made to board the Honduran vessels. Do you remember the incidents leading up to the decision to board?
Okay. I will give you my account to the best of my recollection.
Mm-hmm.
You are correct. I was at the time 28 years old. Promoted to able mechanic. I was an electrician trained by the Defense Force mm-hmm. in the mechanical area. Sailing from the time I came out of training, mm-hmm. The day after training, I was sailing, and so I've already been had my feet wet. I've been had some experience out to sea, and we went out to sea from July mm-hmm. because you know August 1st was the opening the crawfish season.
Yeah.
So what we did is we went out ahead of time because obviously there were fishermen who were fishing before the opening of the season.
Mm-hmm. And that's common practice.
Yes, it is. And we were on this particular trip, this was the longest I've ever been out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
Because before we were abducted, mm-hmm. we were already out to sea for 3 weeks.
Really?
Out to sea,
on the Montague?
On the Montague. This was the longest I've ever been out to sea
mm-hmm.
since I joined the job. And we were already out to sea for 3 weeks. Now, we did patrols up and down. We did a lot of boardings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we went in the Anguilla Key and Keysall area
mm-hmm.
looking for these poachers.
For poachers, yeah.
Okay, now, bear in mind throughout this story that I am a junior man, mm-hmm. right? I was not privy to certain information
or certain
things.
Orders.
Right, yeah. I wasn't privy to a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because my job was in the engine room.
Correct.
Or if there was some electrical problem, you know, on board to take care of it. That was my job. And I stayed in my lane. I stayed in my corner.
Mm-hmm.
That was common practice in those days.
Yeah.
Okay. We were out to sea. And believe it or not, while out to sea, in all my years of sailing, this was the best the weather's ever been. The sea was perfect. I mean, everything was perfect before that. This kid.
I smile because that seems to be synonymous with the flamingo story. They say the day before the attack, it was the best weather they had ever seen. Yeah, go on.
You know, everyone was happy, mm-hmm. jubilant. Nothing went wrong. Everything was just perfect. It was mm-hmm. like living a dream.
Right.
I was happy to be able to see the Montague sailed. I mean, you know, we everything was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came, we saw in the distance, using the binoculars, we saw these fishing vessels. We saw also smaller boats in the water where, you know, the guys would put the smaller ones over. They would dive, put their catch into the dinghies and go to the mother boat
mm-hmm.
or the mother ship and offload. We saw them, so we started heading towards them. While heading towards them, the captain, the commanding officer at the time, Lieutenant Fowler,
mm-hmm.
He tried to make radio contact with them, you mm-hmm. know. And as we went up to them, we realized these guys, you know, start shuffling, getting things together, starting to head out.
Right.
Now, during this time, Montague's maximum speed
mm-hmm.
was about 11 knots.
Okay.
And hopefully the wind was behind us.
10 knots, depending on which way the wind coming.
Yeah. Or nine, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Montague was a beautiful vessel. I liked it. I liked sailing on it. And mm-hmm. 11 knots was maximum.
Okay.
So we started toward these guys, and they pulled off, okay? Mm-hmm. There were two vessels. And for some reason, the two vessels just followed each other.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't separate. One right behind the other, so we were right behind them.
Okay.
So there were three vessels in a line, you know, chasing. This was like Friday. If I remember correctly, it was about, let's say 11 a.m. Okay. Around this time in the morning.
Okay.
And, you know, we were hoping that these boats were not faster than the Montague.
Okay.
Luckily, they were not.
Okay.
I think the two boats were the Lisa and the Morisco 1.
The Lisa and the Morisco 1.
Okay. Yes. And the boats were slower than the Montague. I think the Morisco 1 did 10 knots
mm-hmm.
and the Lisa was about 9.
Okay.
9 knots.
Mm-hmm.
So we were chasing them for hours. At time, just you know.
Did you ever open fire?
In the beginning, before they took off, mm-hmm. yes. We the CO, the commanding officer, got the GPMG on deck. Mm-hmm. We fired a few shots, mm-hmm. and you know they just took off. After they took off, we fired a few shots, mm-hmm. Warning shots, and they did not stop. Mm-hmm. We said, okay, this is going to be long. We started chasing them. We chased them. After about it was a good while, maybe 3 hours. When we got them, it was in the afternoon.
Wow.
Now, what had happened, I think the Morisco 1, for some reason, stopped. They stopped. I don't know if it was mechanical reasons, mm-hmm. but they stopped. And let me say at this point now, before I forget that at some point in time, I learned, because this was not told with the crew, but while we were on board the vessel, when we were as hostages, mm-hmm. as kidnapped people, we learned that the captains took off and they left men under the water.
Wow.
Now when we were passing the boats, we saw empty boats,
right.
Okay, as I remembered.
Right.
But the captain said to me sometime that he said, man, we left our men in the water. I said, you left men in the water? They were diving.
On the dinghies?
Yes. Okay. They were diving. We were already 3 hours away from them. And actually, when he told me this, we were on our way out of the country anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's so serious that they would sacrifice their people, mm-hmm. to escape. And that's what they did.
Right.
Okay. So after several hours of chasing, we finally caught them. The captain... The commanding officer of Monaco, Lieutenant Fowler at that time, we put the boats together, we tied them together, and they were tied alongside the Monaco.
Okay.
What we did, security purposes, he took a few men, I was included in that. Mm-hmm. We were given our weapons, submachine guns at that time. And with magazine, the magazines, and those machine guns use 9mm rounds.
Right.
Okay. We fitted our magazines to our weapons. We had our uniforms on, obviously, and we were security, which means we didn't know who were on the vessels. Mm-hmm. We know that those fishing vessels carry a lot of people.
Right.
In many cases. So we talked about security. We implemented what we talked about, mm-hmm. and what we needed to do next was get information from these people and pass it on to Coral Harbor,
right.
Which was done.
Right.
So we got the name of the skippers, the captains of both vessels. We got their information, the age, date of birth, where they came from, etc. We got all the information. That the information was passed on to Coral Harbor. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we were standing by, from what I can remember, for further instructions from Coral Harbor.
Correct.
So we had these boats tied alongside. So we had three boats tied.
So you've got them in a side bridle, which is what you'd call it. Right?
Yes, right. But Monaco on one end,
right.
And the two boats on the other end, right. Okay? So it's one line. Now, we had security posted.
Right.
So what we decided to do was put security on each vessel.
Okay.
To minimize any mishaps or anything. So we had,
and this is over 100 men, because we
got all the information. Mm-hmm. We discovered that the Miss Lisa had 56 fishermen. In total, it was 56 people. Mm-hmm. And then we discovered that the Morisco 1 had 71 persons. Mm-hmm. Now, listen. This does not include the people we left under the water, you know.
Right.
That they left under the water.
Right. So this is over 100 people.
Yeah. It's more than 127 people.
Right.
Okay. So, because during that time, I am sure we didn't know. Well, I didn't know as a marine mechanic. Mm-hmm. I don't think the captain knew. Because when we passed those boats, we were not that close. We didn't see anybody in those skiffs. You know?
Right.
I mean, if somebody was there, you know, we would probably stop, sure. arrest them, or show them on board, or that didn't happen.
What was the size of the crew of Monaco?
Monaco at the time?
Yeah. 13, maybe?
Monaco, we normally carry a full complement. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, at that time, you know, the first Monday in August is a holiday.
Right.
And, you know, people want to be home with their families.
On vacation, yeah.
People were on vacation. one or two people did not make that voyage.
So Montague went with a skeleton crew.
We went with a makeup crew, I would say. We had a makeup crew because there were some people there from other vessels, you know, who sailed with us. We didn't mind, you know, because we all knew each other. We all sailed together before. Mm-hmm. It was a makeup crew. But I do think we were short a few, very few people. Now, it wasn't that dramatic. It wasn't that much people that we were short of. If I were to make a guess, I would probably say three seamen we probably were short.
So the crew was about 18, maybe?
The crew normally is 18. So we probably had like 15 people, you know, and to be honest with you. I could be wrong. This is the best of me. Because 27 years ago,
27 years later.
A lot of things happened in between, you know, between then and now.
So you get them in a side bridle. How do you, if you've got them all hitched up, right? Because people are listening, so I want them to follow us.
Yes.
Everybody's all hitched up. We got them stitched together. They're in a straight line. Right. We got them.
Yes, we do.
All right? How do they get away from you all?
Okay, well, see, it's a lot that happened in between.
Okay.
Tying them up and getting away. So let me continue with the story.
Sure.
We had them tied up. We got all the information we needed to get from them. Mm-hmm. We sent some seamen through the vessels to make sure that everybody was on deck. Mm-hmm. Everybody was accounted for, that there were no injuries or sick, etc. Now, while we did this, I went into the Miss Lisa, mm-hmm. and I saw a gentleman just lying there. He was lying down and on his bunk. Everybody moved except this one particular gentleman, as I remembered. Mm-hmm. So I asked, you know, what was the problem? Now, obviously, at this time, we already found out that these men speak Spanish.
Okay.
Most of them, they spoke Spanish. Now, here's the thing. Let me just set the groundwork here. These men were from Honduras, a country in Central America, and they spoke Spanish, mm-hmm. but we discovered that they spoke English. They sounded just like us.
Okay.
To me, they sounded like they were from Turks and Caicos.
Okay.
Okay. And they were brown skin, black like us. Mm-hmm. They looked like us. Mm-hmm. They had some, obviously, Indians on board. You know, most Spanish-speaking countries have these Indian-looking
people.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So they were Indians, very few of them. And I think they did most of the diving. They were very good divers from what we understood. Mm-hmm. They were black people like us, brown skin, whatever you want to call them, like us. They looked like Bahamians. They looked like Turks and Caicos people. They looked like Jamaicans. They looked like regular Caribbean people.
Right.
They spoke like us, and they spoke Spanish.
Okay,
which was, to me, in the beginning, was very confusing.
Okay.
But I discovered later, talking to the captain, that they were from a group of islands, a string of islands, just
Honduras.
Off Honduras.
Right.
Which was also, they were also a part of Honduras.
Okay.
So they had to speak the language, which was the language in Honduras is Spanish.
Okay.
They had to learn to speak Spanish, but they were like Caribbean people, just like how we have Africans who came to the Bahamas and mm-hmm. Africans who came to Jamaica. Mm-hmm. They were Africans who went to these islands who were, I guess, slaves, you know, throughout their history, and that the islands were developing the fishing villages.
And
just
they
like,
joined,
just like in the Bahamas, So they were regular Caribbean people. You know, they considered themselves, they were, you
discovered,
know.
What, tell us the part about the chap in the bunk. You say you discovered.
Oh, yes. So I discovered a gentleman in the bunk and he wasn't moving. So I was informed, but you know, he was sick. He was just ill. We don't know what was wrong with him. They couldn't tell us. Does he have malaria? Does he have what was the problem? We didn't know. We never found out. The gentleman, as far as I'm aware, he didn't die. He didn't get any worse. But he just laid there. So the captain said, "Listen, our captain, the CO, commanding officer, said everybody." I informed him. I said, "I find this gentleman. He seemed to be very ill, and he's not moving." He said, "Look, we need everybody on
the deck.
Everybody has to be accounted for. I need to look at everybody. I got to make sure no one is in these boats, that we have everybody here." Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, the captain of the Miss Lisa wanted to speak with our CO. Mm-hmm. So I informed the CO. Now, let me just add that we had handheld radios.
Okay.
We had radios, okay? Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to go running up and down saying this. You know,
right.
We had handheld radios. I informed the captain. He said, listen, CEO, captain of the Miss Lisa wants to speak with you. He said, listen, right now, we don't have no time for that. We need to get these people sorted out to see who is who, what is what, where we going from here, inform Coral Harbor so we could get information, and that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't happen. So as the day went on, you know, it's coming towards night now. What are we going to do? So I don't think Coral Harbor had sent us a response as yet. They were still, you know, dealing with the information that we had sent them.
Okay.
So night was coming. So the CEO said, okay, we're gonna stay here. We're gonna tie up, and we're gonna let Coral, you know, communicate with Coral Harbor in the morning. If they say we have to proceed to Nassau, we'll do that first light, right, et cetera. So,
and the reason you need instructions is because Coral Harbor may say, take them into Ragged.
Right.
We'll
right.
fly a plane there. Or Coral Harbor will right. say, stand fast. We're going to send a backup vessel,
right,
et cetera,
so,
et cetera.
Yeah, we debate okay. on what they had to say to us. we were. And let me just say, at this time, I don't know what the protocol was, you know, being a junior man.
Right.
Okay, because someone may call in and say, you know, what do you normally do? At that time, I was not aware of the protocol. Okay. I was an engineer. I was an electrician. I was not a seaman.
Mm-hmm.
I was not privy to certain information. You know, that was the officers on board
right.
and the senior enlisted on board who dealt with the administration and daily running
of the ship.
Of the vessel, as well as things they do doing arrests, et cetera. So I wasn't privy to that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to be honest, it really didn't bother me because my job was to keep the electricity on.
Correct. On board
that's
the ship.
That's what I did. So I was a part of the security team. And then I realized that we had Carey as a part of the, Abel Seaman Carey, Lorenzo Carey.
Lorenzo Carey.
You know, we had Archer, Anthony Archer, who was also an AB.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another mechanic on board, Mackenzie. Mackenzie was a marine mechanic. He was the junior man among the four of us.
Okay.
So we provided security throughout the night.
Mm-hmm.
So we were awake on. We didn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
We had to make sure that these men were on one spot on their vessel. They didn't move. We had to make sure these men didn't make any attempt to go toward the monocue.
Right.
Right. So we kept them in line. It was no problem. They gave us no problems. There were no issues, you know. That went well. So now it's morning. It's morning. I'm a bit tired first because I was up from early Friday morning,
right.
You know. And then we started the chase. Then we made the arrest. I did security detail. Now it's Saturday morning. Trust me, I'm extremely tired. And I went to the CO, you know, because he was very good. He communicated with us. He told us, you know, he said, okay, Roel, come on board. I want you all guys to come on board. I'm going to send, as you two come, we're going to send another two to take your place to continue security detail.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got Mackenzie, we got Archer back, and we sent two other people to take their place.
Sure.
So we came on board. We took a shower. We ate breakfast. If you had to change your clothes, you change your clothes. Did what you had to do. You had some time. It's a downtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a few hours of downtime. So it's daytime now. We have the other guys doing their sentry duties. Yeah, sentry duties, okay? No problem. Waiting to hear from Coral Harbor. I'm doing this time now on the radio, handheld radios. The captain, he's adamant. He wants to speak with our CEO. He's adamant. So the CEO was saying, listen, man, I'm for this, man. You know, we you know, give it some time. Mm-hmm. Let me hear from Coral Harbor. Then I'll talk to the captain and let him know what I expect from him and his crew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now it's about afternoon.
The following day.
No. We still on Saturday because we arrested them. We got them on Friday. It's still Saturday.
Saturday
day.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Saturday day. So now we're having lunch. So what the CEO decided is that, okay, well, when we went on board, another thing I didn't mention was that these two vessels, captured crafts, had walk-in freezers.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is normal for them.
Yeah, they had walk-in freezers.
They don't have any other kind of freezer.
And the freezers were stacked from bottom to top, back to front. I mean, with bags and bags and bags of crawfish.
Yeah.
And they had a few bags of fish. The fish were not as much as the crawfish.
Right.
they had a lot, a world of crawfish. So, you know, after the information got to the CEO, he said, listen, okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. We've been out to sea for some time. You know, we tired eating corned beef this thing and tuna.
We're going to have some steamed tails.
Yeah, so we're gonna take one or two tails from these guys. We're going to cook it for our lunch. Right. And that's what we did.
Right, it
was no big deal, So we had the CEO say, Roland, you know, eat a good lunch now because, you know, you guys were up all night.
Right.
Make sure I get your rest. Get your water. Drink your water. You know, back then, you know, we took to see sodas. We lost sodas. You know, soft Kool-Aid, you know. We had stuff like that. So I made sure, full up, I drank my sodas, I drank my water, you know. I can't remember the cook or what he fixed. But we had crawfish.
Crawfish was in it.
Oh, yeah. and the food was good.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I think during those days, I think Choppy, Abel Seaman Seymour was our cook.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I remember Choppy made a few chips with Abel Seaman Seymour. He was a very good cook.
Yeah.
And most of the CEOs wanted him on board because he was excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was great. He cooked whether it was rough, whether it was calm. The food was edible. The food was enjoyable. And we had a good lunch that day. I drank my water, my soft drinks. I relaxed. He said, okay, we're going to start the sentry duties again with the same people. You know, we working around.
That's how you got back on board.
That's how we got back on board.
So
right.
Because this security team was working together. You, Archer, Carey, McKenzie. That was the team.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. This was the team because.
All relieved the other security team.
Right.
Took your duties back up as security.
Exactly. Team. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, night is falling.
Mm-hmm.
So as night falls, we realize something. Let me go back to Friday night. Friday night when we had the guys tied up,
mm-hmm.
and I was on board a sentry, the lights went out. The lights on the Miss Lisa went out.
Okay.
It went dead. So, you know, Monique crew isn't asleep. They realized that the lights went out.
Mm-hmm.
So they radioed me and say, Roel, what's the book? Because I was a senior man. Mm-hmm. At the time, out of the four of us, I was a senior person. So he radios me and he says, Roel, you know, what's the problem? So I said, sir, let me investigate. So I grabbed the captain. I say, sir, how is it that your lights are off? I can hear your generator running. Mm-hmm. Your generator is good because when I checked the engine room, mm-hmm. you have an Onan generator. And I thought only the Van Force had Onan generator. You had a nice Onan generator that ran beautifully. It was very nice. The engine was good. I said, you know, what's the problem? He said, oh, you know, this is an old boat. The Lisa was a old wooden, let me tell you, this boat had seen its time.
Mm-hmm.
The Mirsco one was a more modern boat and a better boat.
Sure.
Yeah, but the Lisa was shabby to say the least.
So you rectify that problem.
Yeah, so I found that the wires were not properly connected, electrical wires that brought power to the deck, to the compass,
sure.
to the radios, etc.
You take care of that.
Yeah, so I took my flashlight. I got a flashlight and I traced the wires. I taped them together. I fixed them very well. I took my linesman pliers and I turned those wires and made sure that they would not break again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at least not easily.
Mm-hmm.
So the lights came back on. So I reported to the COSA boss some. They have electrical problems. The wires came loose somehow.
Have you heard from Coral Harbor yet?
Well, I cannot answer that because if they heard
you
from
Coral Harbor, you wouldn't have been in the bridge.
When I sailed, I was never in the bridge.
Right.
As a mechanic.
Yeah,
I was never in the bridge.
Okay.
Engine room, and that's it.
So tell me this, or unless there's a boarding.
Unless there's a boarding.
Okay. So obviously, at some point, you hear from Coral Harbor.
Yes, at some point.
How do you get loose from the Honduran vessels? This is the story.
Okay, we're getting there. No problem. Mm-hmm. I'll get there. So now that I've already explained that the captured craft had electrical problems, the boat was old, the wiring was old, and the wires came loose. Okay, we knew, and the CEO knew that, hey, this boat from time to time is plunged into darkness because of electrical problems.
Sure.
Okay, so now let's go back to Saturday. Saturday now, the CEO says, okay, here's what we're going to do, Roel. Carey, Archer, McKenzie, here's what we're going to do. we're going to make sure that the boats steer, let's say 270, which mm-hmm. is west. That's going on.
Sure.
So make sure they steer 270. We're going to go head toward Nassau. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah, so if there are any changes, I will let you know.
Right. So the captain has carriage of the vessel. The captain of those vessels has carriage of the vessels. You all are on a sentry.
Yes.
The boats are moving under their own steam.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're moving under
their
own steam.
We're headed towards Nassau.
We're heading toward Nassau. We in the back of Andrews. Yeah, come up to Andrews, go mm-hmm. around. So we walk. So here's what we're doing now. We're heading towards Nassau. We're making sure that we're doing two things. We're making sure that the prisoners are all in one area mm-hmm. on their vessel.
Mm-hmm.
And remarkably, they gave us no problem. There were no issues.
Mm-hmm.
The CO was in the bridge,
mm-hmm.
and he had one of his crew
right.
stare.
Right.
So I'm making sure that the CO of the captured craft does his job,
mm-hmm.
which is to make sure the boats stay running on this particular course.
Right.
And I'm also making sure that
the detainees aren't moving.
Yes, the detainees are
okay.
still in one area.
Okay, so we're headed towards Nassau, nine knots thereabout.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When does the Montague, how does the Montague
okay,
somehow?
this is, we're setting up now, this is afternoon going into evening.
Mm-hmm.
Montague is right behind us.
Okay.
Okay, it's right behind us. So we had the Morisco one, I think, in front, the Miss Lisa right behind, and Montague behind us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I could see the Montague. So it's about it's early evening. After 5, 6, it's summer, so you know, the sun mm-hmm. sets about 8:30.
Right.
So it's about 6, I think about 6 p.m. My radio, the CO, the commanding officer of Montague, radios me, and he says, "Roel, if you look to your port side, you will see another boat in the distance."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the boat was a little over a mile. It was over a mile,
okay.
Put it that way. And he said, "I'm going to quickly
check them out.
Check that out.
And come back
while
on course.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And return behind you on course.
Okay.
Stay on that course."
Okay.
I say, "You know, Roger, yeah. No problem." So he goes off to the port and he goes to check out this other vessel that is in the area that may have been poaching.
Okay.
Okay. To find out what the situation is. So I'm looking at him. I'm looking at the men on the captured craft. I'm looking at the captain of the captured craft. I'm looking at the compass to make sure, you know,
270.
They stay on course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's 270 as example. Just to stay on course. Okay, it's getting dark now, so I start to get worried. They say that Montague taking a while to return.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I know the boat's slow, but we slow as well. I said, yeah. Then I hope somehow he gets back here. So, it's dark now, and the radio goes off. Say, "Roel, we could see you. We could see you guys. We heading
you're
back.
Making our approach."
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So after those words, you know, the lights start flashing. The lights on the capture craft start flashing. Now another thing, let me say to you, because you know the Fen Force fellas out there who are listening, people out there who are listening, you know that we also have to keep the detainees from communicating.
Right.
Okay. We don't need them communicating with people with each other.
Right.
Formulating a plan.
Right.
So now, in between all of this, somehow I believe they were communicating. Probably they had radios that we were not aware of. But I know one thing: the Miss Lisa, the CO of the Miss Lisa, and the CO of the Morisco One were on one accord, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I said, "Hold on, your lights are acting crazy again. Is there another problem?"
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at the wires. Mr. Wires were right in the bridge mm-hmm. that I joined together coming from the engine room.
Right.
The wires were still good. Another thing I noticed while I was checking that wire was that the light on the compass
mm-hmm.
had gone out.
Okay.
I said, "Nah, the only way the compass light could go, if you pull that out right there,
mm-hmm.
right where the compass is, right behind the compass, the light's coming into the compass." So I said, "Listen, man, this ain't, you know." So I radio the CSA CO. These fellas seem to be having electrical problems again. I don't know if this sabotage, but no, the compass light is off. And I say, "No, let me make make another check. So I tell Kerry, say, Kerry, listen, I'm going right to the end of the bridge here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see where the wires are coming up from the engine room. I have to, you know, turn my back. I got to go on my knees and look down. I said, let me just look at these wires to make sure everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let you know. So Kerry said, okay, no problem. So he walks back to the stern where
the Zinis are.
Right, where mm-hmm. they are on their vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So before I got down on my knees to look at the wires coming from the floor,
mm-hmm.
the lights go off completely.
Okay.
We in darkness now.
Okay.
We in total darkness. The engine is still running.
Mm-hmm.
The generator is still running.
But there are no lights.
But there are no lights.
Okay.
So I said, what? So after a few minutes, I hear, oh! I say, hold on. That sounds like Kerry.
Uh-huh.
That sounds like Kerry. So I turn around, I run to the back, and I don't remember seeing any detainees.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I see the back and it's empty, and I don't see Kerry. So as I turn, I say, you know what? Let me get into the
bridge.
Right, back into the bridge. Mm-hmm. As I run toward the bridge, let me just point this out. There was a gentleman on board the captured craft that these fishermen respected highly.
Okay.
And they called him the gorilla.
Okay.
He apparently was a person who was familiar with guerrilla warfare.
Okay.
He must have been in some small skirmish, some small war.
Okay.
Between Guatemala, and he was from Guatemala. And he had some experience with fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually respected his advice. He was their go-to man,
sure,
you know,
sure.
Especially in a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
So he had already informed them and spoken to them about what to do.
Okay.
I mean, you know, because they had to speak at some point in time.
Okay.
So when I was running back,
you still haven't seen Kerry yet.
No, I haven't seen Kerry.
Okay.
And Kerry was the one with the weapon because
you was down there doing the electrical work.
I was trying to check the electrical work. Exactly.
So Kerry had both weapons at this point.
No. Okay. Clarification. Very good. Good question. On each vessel,
mm-hmm.
we had one weapon.
Wow.
One weapon per person.
Wow.
Okay. Not per person, but one between
one
the two people.
For each team.
Yeah. We had right. So now the difference is what we did was we had one weapon and two mics. So what the CO did was, well, what he instructed, because he didn't do these things personally, he instructed that we had two full magazines
mm-hmm.
and they were taped together.
Okay.
So let's say something went wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
You started firing.
You had garage of oil.
Yeah. You simply
break the tape.
Press the release.
Yeah.
No, you press the release. The magazine will come out, mm-hmm. and you just flip it over and put it back and put the next
okay.
full magazine
yeah, yeah,
back in.
Okay.
So they were taped together end to end.
Okay, sure.
Separate ends. Okay.
Sure.
So now you being a former defender, you understand
yeah,
what I'm
yeah.
saying,
mm-hmm.
but other people may not.
Okay.
So one magazine was in, the next magazine was taped
to
that
it.
Magazine,
yeah.
but with the
rounds pointing it up.
There you go.
Direction. So you hear Kerry,
mm-hmm.
you see the gorilla.
Yeah. As I ran back to the bridge, this mm-hmm. gentleman they respected as this guerrilla fighter was in the doorway
of the bridge.
And he had the weapon, he had the SMG, the mm-hmm. submachine gun.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hold on now, you have the submachine gun, so that means Kerry no longer run.
Mm-hmm.
So now things really got serious. So I noticed that he was trying to actually pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to fire the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So now I said, you got to think now.
Yeah.
You know, my adrenaline running. And I said, I looked to see, to get close up on him, to see if the safety switch was on or off because the gun wouldn't fire.
Right.
So I got up on him and I see that the gun was on safe.
Okay.
Thank God. I was happy that of that. So I grabbed him and I threw him to the ground,
mm-hmm.
right? I wrestled him to the ground and I took the gun. I took the weapon away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I traveled, I had my rigging knife.
Okay.
You know, when we joined the Defense Force, we were given rigging knives.
Right.
You know, when you go to sea, you carry a knife, you know? So I took my rigging knife out and I went out.
Mm-hmm.
I went to stab him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I went to stab him. I said, because Kerry ain't here. Kerry
right.
may be dead.
Right.
This guy trying to pull the trigger, he obviously trying to kill me.
Right.
So I said, if I got to die, taking him with me.
Okay.
That's how I was thinking.
Sure.
So as I raised my hand to stab him, the other guy, the other fisherman, they all pile up on me, like a football game, and
okay.
I was the quarterback. They just pile up on me.
Right. So now they've got you.
Yeah, now they got me.
Okay.
So they got some rope and they tied my hands in front of me.
You still haven't seen Gary.
I still haven't seen Gary. So I said, where is Gary? I'm talking to the captain. I said, hey, where is Gary? Where is Marine Seaman Gary? So no one is answering. So they directed me to the port side of the boat. And they say, sit down. So as I sat down, Kerry was on my left. And Kerry was soaking wet from head to toe. I say, Kerry, what happened to you? Kerry say, by rule, fellas them come at me, and I jump overboard. He jump in the water. He said, the only thing is I was holding on to the boat. I didn't let go. I say, Kerry, well, I happy you didn't let go because it's pitch black over here. It's dark.
Dark night, yeah. You know, y'all wouldn't find him anymore.
I say, we don't know where we are. We in the ocean. There's sharks, the other things that can harm you, kill you. I said, I glad you didn't let the boat go. He said, but I glad too. He say, I thought you was dead. So when these fellas come at me, in my mind, I'm thinking, you dead.
Okay.
I say, Kerry, when I see this fellow they call a gorilla with the weapon, I was thinking, you dead.
Yeah.
So they happy you wasn't dead. So because we were awake from Friday morning, and it's now Saturday evening, mister, I put my head next to his shoulder, and I went straight to sleep.
Okay.
Kerry put his head next to my head, and we went straight to sleep.
You're both tied up.
We were tired. We were exhausted. Trust me.
And tied up.
And tied up. Yeah, okay. We were both tied up.
Okay.
So now we slept. When I woke up, it was the next day. It was probably 11 o'clock. The sun high, and we slept. Physically, your body, we just couldn't take anymore.
You wake up, the Montague's nowhere around.
Montague wasn't around. The Morisco one wasn't around. And as I look, I could see small islands in the distance. So I said, Kerry, he said, well, do you have any idea where we are? I say, boy, I think we're in the Florida Keys. He said, why you said? I say, you know, I've seen pictures. I've never sailed through the Florida Keys, but I said, this look like some of these islands are Florida. And I was correct.
Okay.
And as we sailed, I saw, you know, other signs that we were
near America.
Yes.
Okay.
When we were in the Florida Keys.
Sure. So, which is interesting because the newspaper account is that the U.S. Coast Guard planes went with their radars looking for you all. And if you all sailed, what is that, west and then north,
right,
and they came from north going towards, you know, Key Lobos Key, looking for you all.
Right.
I think Leon Smith also accounted that what they assumed happened was that you all ran up under the shell for Cuba.
Right.
But if what you're saying now is that when you opened your eyes, maybe 10 hours later, you were off the coast of Florida.
Yeah.
It is possible that those planes flew straight past you all.
Yes, that is possible, yes.
Yeah.
It is possible. Another thing is now, it's some hours later, and about 12, like you say, 10 to 12 hours later, and we are still tied up. We could see these keys. Now, excuse me, remember that the timeline, it was 27 years ago.
Right.
The timeline.
Sure.
You know, may not be accurate, but I'm telling you from the best of my recollection, we are now in the Florida Keys. And Kerry and I, we are talking. So Kerry's saying, you know, man, what are we going to do? How we can get off this boat? So I say, Kerry, whatever you do, you need to relax. I spend most of my time counseling Kerry. No, but I was counseling Kerry, seriously. And in reality, I was counseling myself.
Right.
You know? So I say, look here, you got to take it easy. You got to relax. And one thing I like about Kerry, Archer and Mackenzie, they trusted me.
Yeah.
And they respected me as a senior person. Not only that, they thought about like I was the smart one in the crew. So, you know, I had the best ideas. Yeah. And Kerry said, listen, roll whatever you say.
I trust that.
That's what we could do.
We got to take
a break. Whatever you say.
We got to take a break. You hear my music, it means I'm going to the break. I've got more of the story left on the other side. It's a long story. I promise I'm going to bring him back next week. I see you all texting me. Don't go crazy. I've got some more of the story on the next side of the break, though.
Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we want it.
In these dangerous times, you need protection that you can depend on. International Security Alliance will keep your business and assets secure. Our team of skilled and professional officers provide an efficient and effective means to mitigate threats to our clients. Our services include executive chauffeuring, corporate office security, asset management, marina security, and canine security. Get the protection that you can trust. Call International Security Alliance at 601-0766 or at 601-0767. That's International Security Alliance. Enforcement through reinforcement.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
One day, when the glory comes.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for staying with me. Sean Roll is my guest. He is should we call him a survivor? He's a survivor of the Honduran abduction, right? It happened in August of 1994.
Yes.
27 years ago, and he's here recounting the story. I promise you all, I see the text messages. Yes. We wanted to set the stage. It's a two-part story. I'll have him back next week. We'll tell the rest of the story. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're in the Florida Keys. What's happening now?
Okay. Now the interesting part of this whole story is we were in the bridge of the Miss Lisa, Carrie and I.
Mm-hmm.
We were sitting down, like I said, I was counseling him. I was actually counseling
Tell him, Carrie, hold on, Carrie.
Yeah,
don't let go.
Yeah, don't let go. Relax yourself. So, interesting, I remember, Carrie say, Roll. Say, we could jump overboard, we could swim, man. These fellas ain't gonna catch us. We could go to one of those keys we see up there. I say, Carrie, look in the water.
Yeah.
And as we looked down, we saw some sharks.
Mm.
I saw the sharks when we were talking. Now, we were at the side of the boat. In the bridge,
because
we could see the water.
Right.
We were looking around.
Right.
Now, let me just say that the situation was not hostile. These people didn't want to, like, beat up on us or harass us. But I can see they just wanted to get away. They mistreat us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after a few hours, they said, listen, Captain, there's no need for these ropes. Take these ropes off.
Mm-hmm.
So they took the ropes off of us.
Okay.
And he said, listen, you're free to move around the boat. No
you still
problem.
Haven't seen the other two guys yet, though.
No, I haven't seen Archer and I haven't seen
McKenzie. Right.
No, I haven't seen the Marisco one.
Because you told me something about a hunger strike. You said at one point you go on a hunger strike.
Yeah, we can get to that.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So now we saw the sharks. So Carrie say, okay, Roy. Okay, you're right. We can relax. I say, Carrie, I can look for the ideal time. And we can make a break. I don't know when that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you just stay close, stay alert, and we can make
when
our move.
When I say
move.
Jump.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can make our move. So I saying to myself, oh, Lord, I know what we could do. You know, and Carrie was really anxious. You know, mm-hmm. he really was anxious. So,
mm-hmm.
so remarkably, Carrie said, roll, this is like the Coast Guard. I say, what? So I stood up because I was sitting down for a few minutes. I stood up.
The U.S. Coast Guard.
The U.S. Coast Guard. Man,
hallelujah.
They caught a pull up on the side of us like a scarab.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, they was carrying on. So just then, I could see, because the captain was in the bridge most of the time.
Sure.
I could see the look, the expression on his face just changed, you know? So he started shouting out to his men in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So the Coast Guard vessel pulled on the side. They say, Carrie, you see there? I say, now, how'd you jump overboard?
The Coast Guard was going to never save us.
We would have been dead. You would have been dead. They said, now, the Coast Guard, you'll be saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, don't worry about it. You know, put on your best face, man. We going home.
Mm-hmm.
So the Coast Guard said, Skipper, we came on the radio because we could hear them being the bridge. Skipper, you know, give us the information. What's your name? Where you coming from? Where you going? So the skipper started acting crazy. Mummering all kind of gibberish, he playing. So he said, listen, the CO of the Coast Guard vessel, you know, getting upset with him, and he started repeating these orders and these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the CO of the Lisa isn't answering. You know, he's not answering, but then he saw the sense, you know, he's not making any sense. So the gentleman realized that, hey, these people may be speaking Spanish. So you know, and all the Coast Guard vessels,
they have Spanish speakers. Yeah.
They got French speakers, you know. So they
get a communicator.
They get a Spanish speaking fellow. Mm-hmm. They start communicating. So now the CO starts stuttering and talking foolishness again. So they say, prepare to board. We're gonna board this vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So the men on the boat on the Miss Lisa take off their clothes on the deck and they start bathing.
Okay.
They grab soap and water and they
naked.
Start
everybody's
bathing.
Everybody's
naked. Man, listen, this is a real shot. This is
Loon Taylor. Taylor everywhere.
They just bathing. So uh-huh. I say, boy, these fellas smart. I say, listen, the Coast Guard ain't gonna leave. I say, Kerry, because Kerry done getting upset. Kerry say, Roland, let's jump overboard. The Coast Guard people will see us and take us. I say, they may think we are part of the bath session and we just rinsing off. I say, that ain't making no sense. Right? I say, he say, okay, we can stand up and shout. And just before Kerry say that, four of the guys came in. The fishermen came in and sat on me. I was already sitting on the ground, so they pushed me on the ground on my stomach. So I'm laying flat on my stomach. He raises my head and puts a knife to my throat.
Okay.
Okay, so that means, you know.
It's serious now.
Yeah, it's really serious now.
Yeah.
It's really serious now. I say, okay, they don't want us to alert the Coast Guard. But I wasn't, you know, disappointed because I say, these fellas are going to board. If I know them, they can board this vessel.
And they can search the whole thing.
So Kerry say, what do we do? I say, just be calm. So now there's a knife at Kerry's neck.
A knife at your neck?
Yeah, and a knife at my neck. And these fellas have their fingers over their mouth and they're saying, shh. And they close the door. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Coast Guard can't see in and we can't see out. So these fellas on the deck and they bathing. They bathing, man. They all surge up and they throwing water on themselves and they bathing. So I guess after a while, the Coast Guard fellas, the CEO said, you know what? The heck with this, man.
Yeah.
We pulling off. So they left.
Wow.
They pull off and they left.
Wow.
Now, I can't say that they knew we were on board or they had information. I cannot say that.
But the U.S. Coast Guard leaves.
They pull off.
And all hope is gone.
Oh, no.
We got to stop.
That's when they had to really console Kerry.
We out of time. We out of time. Listen, you got to tune in next week, Wednesday. Next week, Wednesday, I'm going to have Mr. Rollback. We're going to finish the story. So write it down in your little diary, wherever you are, right, that the U.S. Coast Guard boat pulls up. You see the light. Hallelujah. The U.S.
Yeah, we see him.
The U.S. are here, right?
We see him.
And they pull away. And
yeah, unfortunately.
You're still on board. We'll pick the story up from there on Wednesday. I know you got some people that you want to send some shout-outs to, so let's see if we can take care of that.
Oh, yeah, I must do this. For Chief Petty Officer Arlington Clark and Chief Petty Officer Marianne Ferguson helping me in the gym every week, I want to send a shout-out to them. Wish them a happy morning, a blessed morning.
Yeah.
I also want to say Entry 19 and the Commodore Defense Force. Good morning to you guys, my good friends.
All right. So listen, follow me next Wednesday. We're finishing the story. It is the Honduran abduction. And we were getting the story that it's been 27 years. These boys are heroes. They've never. You didn't get medals for this, did you?
We got a commendation, a minister's commendation.
But no medal.
Yeah, no medal.
We got to work on these things. Anyway, that's my music. Y'all go lower the flag, all right? 80 dead. We sure he dead now. Because that might have to be what y'all was waiting on to make sure the man was dead. He's dead. 80 Hanna, our former governor general, is dead. Y'all could go lower the flags now. I'm Levin Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's your station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. They've got news. That's next.